seriously? Do not adjust your iPod. Okay.
There's no problem with the sound. It's meant what you're hearing is what you're supposed to be hearing right now.
No, we're not supposed to be hearing.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, enough. Cut.
All right.
That's longer than we usually run any theme music, much less whatever that. What is this?
Linoleum knife.
Yeah, obviously. Thank you.
And I'm back in town.
You are indeed. Turn
my
all
presence
off.
Has been made known.
What is that?
I'm here again.
What is that noisy noise that you made us listen to?
That was in honor of Shark Night.
Okay. And what was it?
Well, as we will be discussing. By the way, you're listening to The Linoleum Knife.
You are indeed.
Starring me, Dave White. And also Alonzo Duralde, who was here last week while I was off.
Yes.
Selflessly caring for my stroke patient mother in a hot nursing home in Dallas, Texas. Selflessly.
Does that halo chafe when you put that on?
No. It's soft like velvet.
Yes. I want to thanks again, by the way, to Jen Yamato and Todd Gilchrist, who subbed last week while you were away.
They were almost as exciting as me.
Yes, well. We do what we can. Anyway, Dave White of Movies.com, kindly explain your ridiculous theme music. If music is even a word we can use to describe.
I believe it was John Cage who described music as just sound. Whatever sound. John Cage, in fact, even composed a piece that was total silence.
Yes, I know.
He composed it.
I.e., he thought of it first.
So I have this cassette from a company, a little cassette company called Ash International.
Uh-huh.
If you're interested, if you're looking for this sort of thing, they are ashinternational.com.
What is this?
ashinternational.com. Okay. Hang on, I'm getting there.
Well, you're like plugging somebody.
No, I'm not plugging anybody. I'm explaining where this comes from. Right. You want to know, did you ask the question, what is this and why are you doing it and where did it come from?
I didn't ask all those questions. I just asked what
I'm
is this.
To tell you
I did not ask for the Dave White half-hour explanation. Just what was that? Literally, what was it? We can post information. We can post links on our Facebook page if people want to find the label or whatever. What did we just listen to?
When you stop being real and start being polite. This show can continue.
Could you go back to Texas?
Anyway, there's a cassette that these guys put out. I would say they probably put out about 100 of these cassettes. They do these little limited edition cassettes of unusual, weird sounds and noises and various musics. The name of this cassette is The Noisiest Guys on the Planet. And it is amplified recordings of decapods, crabs, shellfish, other crustaceans, lobsters and scrimps, stuff like that.
So that's your tie-in music for Shark Night.
And these are Louisiana foods, except for lobster, which is Maine, where we were
yes.
Not long ago. But because Shark Night is set in Louisiana, and there are more, most likely 1 million more shrimp down there than there are flying, leaping, acrobatic sharks.
And Shrimp Night would sound too much like a special at Red Lobster, I suppose.
This is actually the amplified recordings of the noises that decapods make as they skitter along the bottom of the bayous.
The bayous.
Yeah.
And what's a decapod, Dave?
It's a thing with deca number of pods.
10. 10 legs, English major.
Stop asking me questions. I'm trying to explain to you that this theme music is highly appropriate for what we're going to talk about. And it was music, because this is what I listen to when I'm doing the dishes.
Really?
These cassettes that we have in the kitchen, all the cassettes that we use on Linoleum Knife mm-hmm. are located in our kitchen,
yes.
stacked high up against the wall in towering stacks.
Indeed they are.
And
making it and rather tricky to get ones out from the bottom.
And we have this cassette player in our kitchen. New listeners might find this fascinating.
No doubt. And the old ones too. Everyone's on
the cassette edge player. Of their seat. Left to me yes. by my late father.
Doesn't play CDs anymore.
The CD player crapped out after about a year and a half.
Yeah, and it's not so hot with the radio either.
But the cassette player still rolls.
Yes.
And we've got all these cassettes. And so this is what we use when we are washing the dishes. Now, Alonzo, while he is washing the dishes, listens to vintage 80s music that he cannot unstuck himself from. But I am a progressive sort with curious ears who wants to hear decapods.
Okay, you waited for me to be out of the room to say that bollocks. I happen to have a lot of old mixtapes from the days when I made mixtapes.
Right.
And those are the cassettes I have in the kitchen. I don't order limited edition of 100 cassette sounds of decapods flopping around the bayou.
Well,
and,
I do.
And I'm and okay with that, frankly.
I do, and that's what makes me amazing.
My fist is going to make your face amazing.
So, anyway, Shark Night.
Yeah. Boy.
Why don't you tell everyone the plot?
Okay. So a bunch of students from Tulane decide to go to this one girl's beach house for the weekend, and it's on this island way, way, way out in the middle of the bayou. And she hasn't been there in a long time, because the last time she was there, she accidentally cut some guy's face with a propeller.
That's my favorite line of dialogue in the movie. I cut his face with the propeller. Like, she's so mournful about it. I cut his face with the propeller. And here's the thing. The guy whose face she cut with the propeller is that dude.
Chris Carmack.
From the OC. Do you know what he looks like with a scarred face?
Still hot.
Like a male model with one scar on his face. Thereby.
That would get him work.
Would get him work and would get people to go, look at that sexy scar on your face. You know what I mean? Like,
so you look like you got hit with a propeller.
She's got no reason to be upset. Yeah.
Anywho, so so it's rich girl and nice guy and jock and his girlfriend
and
slut and nerd and vain preening pretty boy. And there's sharks in the bayou.
And they all get eaten up. Everybody gets eaten.
There's lots of eating going on.
And frankly,
I would be down for a movie called Shark Night 3D, particularly given that it's from the director of Snakes on a Plane and Final Destination 2.
Yep.
So, bring on.
Which were both awesome.
Totally. Bring on the trashy, junky, ridiculous, shark shenanigans. But no.
It took me up until about a week before it opened, before I realized
that it was PG-13.
Like, I just assumed.
Yeah.
In the wake of Piranha 3D.
That if you're going
to
do
it. Everyone had woken up to the fact that everything needs to be insane and gory and mayhem from start to finish.
Right.
People have not woken up to that
Apparently
fact.
Apparently not. No. Sadly, that memo remains unreceived. So, this movie is boring and stupid and generally a waste of time. Dave and I had fun watching it because we were mocking it throughout, basically. And
yeah. Well, here's... I find myself talking about The Roommate more and more as the year goes on.
It's a touchstone.
It's one of the worst movies to come out this year. Legitimately terrible.
Yes, no question.
But I had a good time watching The Roommate.
Because you watched it with Gray.
Because I watched it with Gray, and we sat there and we goofed on it and made each other laugh at 9:30 a.m. on a Friday morning when we went to see it. And we were maybe like two of five people in the whole theater.
See,
We weren't loud. We contained.
Right.
You know, our enthusiasm for making each other laugh.
I went at midnight and by myself, and most of the people in the theater were like teen girls who were actually excited about seeing The Roommate. So it was miserable. I would have had much more fun seeing it with you guys.
Here's what's good about it. I'll just say this. This is good about it. The way that they show them driving lots of places and riding boats lots of places.
And they just speed it up.
It really did remind me of Manos, the Hands of Fate. Like this constant driving.
Weekend trip, it's an overnight drive.
Yeah. They are driving and driving and driving and
you
driving.
You need a montage.
And then they go in a boat. And then they're just a boat. And then the boat gets chased by a cop in a boat. And the boat cop turns out to be Donald Logue, who's like the friendly local sheriff, you know. And hey, how are you kids doing? And, you know, word up. And stuff, you know,
I think the whole reason behind that was to show like how far from civilization they are, and how they don't even have any cell phone coverage.
I don't think there was a reason to show anything.
Well, no, but here's the thing though: the whole thing is about we don't have cell phone coverage, we can't reach a hospital, blah blah blah. If you owned a home
and a boat
on an island
and grew up there,
wouldn't you have a shortwave radio?
You would, and you would also get in your boat and know the speediest way to get to the hospital that you need to get to after the shark bites your friend's arm off. You would know these things. But instead, what Sarah Paxton, the lead, the final girl, as I always like to call her.
The thoroughly blank final girl.
She's just sort of like, What are we gonna do? You know, like everyone just kind of gathers around the guy whose arm has just been bitten off. And did you see Soul Surfer?
I did not. No.
Do you know what they do in Soul Surfer when Anna Sophia Robb gets her arm bitten off?
No.
Everyone leaps into super action and they get her to that hospital as fast as possible. And they have to do some pretty arduous stuff to get to the hospital too because they're not close to
right.
one. They like drive like crazy. No, this movie. Dude's got his arm bitten off, and people are like, oh, no.
And I love how...
What happens now?
The one guy who knows how to apply a tourniquet and everything, it's because he's pre-med.
Right, yeah.
Pre-med! That means, yeah, you took some bio classes, and you might know anatomy, but, you know, unless your summer job was EMT, right. Being pre-med does not teach you how to do anything as far as saving anybody's life. Hey, anyway.
So,
But yeah, they do sort of rush off to the hospital, but then somebody else gets eaten.
Well, they don't anywhere when they finally do get him in a... Like, they first they try to get him in a boat, but the boat, like, explodes. And then they try to get him in a jet ski, and the shark eats the jet ski. And then they try to get him in another boat. And then, no, wait. I'm sorry. I'm losing track of all the plot. Right. Then he decides, no, don't take me to the hospital. I'm going to get a javelin in my good arm. And I'm going to go back into the water
and
I'm
kill the shark.
Kill the shark
that ate my girlfriend.
Little does he know.
The first time we were in the boat and my blood was dripping in the water.
Yeah.
And
little does he know.
There's more than one shark on Shark Night.
And there's a reason that there's more than one shark. And it's a spoily bit of information to tell you why there's more than one shark. And Catherine McPhee is in this movie. She came in second to Taylor Hicks on American Idol. So he won American Idol, and she won this. And again, in Soul Surfer, Carrie Underwood plays a youth pastor whose job it is to look concerned.
Maybe that's the new thing with shark movies. We have to get somebody who was on American Idol. So, give me that girl with the jacked up teeth and the cornrows who came in second to that other guy whose name we can't even remember anymore.
What's Melinda Doolittle up to?
Can she play a nurse?
Can she play a shark? ologist.
An ichthyologist. How does she look in a wetsuit?
And so, that's, I don't know where I was going with the Catherine McPhee bit, but it's kind of funny to watch her be in a movie. You know, the way that Colleen from Survivor was in that Rob Schneider
the animal.
Movie, The Animal, like that was kind of funny.
Didn't she like marry somebody way older?
Who knows?
Isn't there some weirdness going on there? Because it's just, I mean, I always remember her being like the, you know, the good girl from Orange County or whatever. That was sort of the way they sold her on Idol. And here she is playing the slut who we first see getting a tattoo on her back and then later never see a tattoo on her back.
They do show a glimpse of it later.
Oh, she's like a tramp stamp.
Yeah, it's down on her. But actually, it's sort of like on her butt.
But it does not look like a tattoo that she just got that day. Like, it would be bloody and have a bandage on it.
Right, right. Which would automatically get her eaten by a shark.
Right.
Yeah.
Which she does anyway. Spoiler.
Yeah. They all get eaten by sharks. But I just, there are funny moments like when they say things. You know, there was this one, I wrote this down. Someone says, somebody at the beginning of the movie says, it's going to be a good weekend. But they say this like 20 minutes into the movie. Like, it takes so long for them to start getting eaten. And then when they do start getting eaten, it's not even fun to watch them get eaten.
No.
Because it's so boring and the sharks aren't really good. And
they're soup. They're like a notch or two above like giant shark, mega shark versus giant octopus level special effects.
Right. And so, you know, you're so impatient for them to start getting eaten. You know, the guy's like, it's going to be a good weekend.
Well, they do.
And I wrote down, not until you start getting eaten.
They do throw in one eating early on, which is a total ripoff of the opening
sequence.
It's
the opening sequence
of Jaws.
It's almost literally shot for shot. Like,
well, it's not that close.
With the exception
it's not
of,
that good.
No. With the exception of the girl being like pulled down, yanked down, and confused.
Right, right.
The whole dragging her zigzaggy back and forth, that was totally.
And of course, in a totally PG-13 way, her boyfriend manages to like remove her top and she puts it back on and there's no booby.
Right.
Like it's all back to the camera underwater. And they're like, come on.
Yeah.
Do you have to be that PG-13?
Yeah. Also.
Yes.
It takes at least 35 minutes for it to actually become Shark Night.
Yeah, there's a lot of shark day.
Shark afternoon.
Yeah,
and for the
shark
most part,
dusk.
And then
for a
shark
while.
Dusk. And then at the end, there's
shark morning.
Early,
shark dawn.
Early dawn. And
shark brunch.
And so I felt cheated about that. You know, I wanted
not enough
to,
night.
I wanted not enough night of shark night. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy the beer pong flotation device.
Which is probably a real thing.
Which has to be a real thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know those existed, but this movie learned me that.
Yes.
I got some
learning.
I don't
even know. I've never played. What are the rules?
You get the ball in somebody else's cup and they have to drink.
You throw
the ping pong ball into the cup and I think they have to drink it. I think that's how it works. I've never played. I'm 47 years old.
Well, I thought maybe you, I don't know.
Do you know what I did in college?
I know you've never played.
Do you know what I did in college?
There was
I worked as a dishwasher.
I know.
I went to class.
There was no beer pong when we were in college. We were in college in the quarters.
After
era.
Class, I went to my other job at Baskin Robbins.
Boy, you are milking the audience sympathy today. Why don't you talk about your sick mom some more?
I did that stuff. I didn't party in college. I did not party in college. I know that's like uncool to say. I just did not party in college. I was not. I went to a school that was kind of like a diploma factory. I know you went to a fancy university, but I went to a state BS kind of school where
where it doesn't stand for Bachelor of Science.
Where where everyone seemed to be drunk all the time.
Yeah.
And
funny, that's what my fancy university was like.
I remember thinking to myself, while I would see these people drunk all the time, and be like, why are you even here? Like, why don't you just go away? You know, you're in my way.
I think there's something so, and no offense to any listeners who are this age, but I think there's something so spectacularly useless about people between the ages of 18 to 23 that they get sent to college just to keep them off the streets for a while and just to like
spectacularly useless.
Just to sort of tide them over until they're finally ready to enter the workplace. Just a theory.
We have friends in between the ages.
I know, I have family who are that age. but, you know, I love them dearly, but let's face it. And I'm saying that as somebody who was that age and was spectacularly useless myself.
Based on the stories you've told me about yourself between the ages of 18 and 23, I would say that you probably did fit the description of spectacularly useless.
Yes. That, I buy that. I own that.
Well, not me, young man. I was busy. I had things to do, and I did not play beer pong.
Well, okay. But I don't think beer pong existed in those days anyway, because I never played it either.
Quarters existed, though, which was essentially the same game, I think.
Right? Yes, pretty much.
Yeah, but grosser, because it's money that you're consuming something that money is in.
Yeah.
Like that a million people have put their poop fingers all over.
Well, you would usually like wipe it down before
Wipe it down?
Or
with what? With what?
A boogery handkerchief. I don't know.
Exactly.
I'm sure if you played it, you would ask the bartender for a shot of Everclear just to put the quarter in.
Can I have a shot of rubbing alcohol to sterilize?
Well, Everclear pretty much is rubbing alcohol. It's the drinkable kind. Shark Knives.
We saw it at the Grove.
Yes, in the awful Expand 3D.
That is. I know I've said this before, and we've actually both said this before, but the Grove is truly just the worst.
Yeah, what did you keep saying? That it was run about as well as an unlicensed daycare?
Run with all the professionalism of an unlicensed daycare center. Yeah. It's...
Okay, we get there for a midnight show.
The ticket machines are not working, and the box office is closed.
Yeah, so like everybody has to line up at guest services to get tickets because it's the only place they've got it going on. Then we walk to the theater where Shark Knight is showing, and there are no 3D glasses, you know, and we have to go tell somebody, and they have to get on the walkie and figure out blah blah blah.
What movie are we showing tonight? And what's happening?
And somebody else is like,
we're in a contained space where we ought to know what's going on. Do we? No, we don't.
Somebody else is like, I thought it was Fright Night. And I kept thinking, but Fright Night's in 3D too, so that's not an excuse for not having the stupid glasses.
Right. Both the movies that you have that are confusing you, that both have the word night in the title, are both also in 3D. And so, stop being stupid.
Yes.
And
at least we weren't in a theater that smelled like sewage.
They've got a couple of theater. They've got a couple of houses.
We weren't in one of the houses in the Grove that have weird smells. Yeah.
Do you know where else is having a weird smell?
AMC Century City?
The Chinese Six. There's one of those big houses that has a weird smell now, too. God. What's going on with these theaters
Because remember the downstairs?
It might have just been the residual smell of the weird chemical cards of Spy Kids 4
could be. Remember the downstairs of the AMC Century City used to smell like a mummy's foot?
A foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gross.
So.
Shark Night.
Shark Night. I think we've said everything there is to be said about Shark Night. Now.
And now, in comparison, I believe that my explanation of the Decapod cassette is more vital and informative to our listeners than anything we just said about Shark Night or anything that you will find in Shark Night should you choose to buy a ticket to Shark Night. Here's what you should watch instead. Piranha 3D. Mako, Jaws of Death.
Oh, God.
Which is a ripoff of Jaws.
I saw that one. From the 70s. Kid.
Deep Blue Sea. And I wrote in my review on movies.com that it just burned me inside that some 12-year-old is going to go see Shark Night 3D this weekend because he can, some bored tween.
Right.
And he has not seen Jaws yet.
No.
And he's going to think, I've seen all. I don't need to see Jaws because I saw Shark Night 3D. Like, he'll not know the difference because his rotten parents haven't done their job yet.
Such is the nature of art. Sadly.
Jaws.
Speaking of which, did you know that they've put out a 25th anniversary reissue of the Spin Doctors Pocket Full of Kryptonite CD?
Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you for telling me about that. Why do you know that?
I read it somewhere.
What news outlets are you reading?
No, like EW or something.
Consider that news. EW.
I think so.
So what is there? Has it been remastered?
Probably. Maybe
are
there's
there
like
extra tracks.
I'm sure there are like.
Are there Junior Vasquez remixes? Like, did they go back in time and get him to, like, remix the song?
Jellybean Benitez?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Are you planning on purchasing?
I am not, actually.
But didn't you own the original CD?
I had a free copy album, of it, yes.
A free copy?
Yes.
That you kept?
For a while.
For your own personal use?
Yeah. Because some of those songs, at the time, I thought were okay.
What were they to you? What were those songs to you at the time?
They were just, you know, nice little pop ditties.
Ditties. What year was this?
1993.
That wasn't 25 years ago.
They're doing a 20th anniversary reissue. Did I say 25th?
I think you said 25th.
Oh, 20th. Sorry.
But it's not even been 20 years.
I think it actually might have originally come out in 2011. I was
you
late.
In 1991?
1991. I was late to that party.
That's a party that I wouldn't even care about.
I know.
To.
I'm just saying. I don't think I heard...
not trying to be cooler than thou here, but gross.
I know. I was not like a huge fan or anything, but I did. Here's the thing. This is a very 90s kind of anecdote. I first heard Two Princes in So I Married an Axe Murderer.
You're killing me. No pun intended. You're killing me.
Anyway. So that was that.
I just the thought of that. It makes me feel pain inside. Amplified decapods. Better music.
I will grant you. If these are the choices.
I'm not even going to get on board for the whole retro, like, oh, it really was actually kind of awesome, you know, the way people do now, the crap things from that time. There's enough of a groundswell of people who were like five.
Oh, like the screening of Good Burger they had at Cinefamily last night?
Good Burger, yeah. Now, I understand, I understand the appeal of Good Burger, because it's a movie about Good Burgers, but I mean, like, you can't ever, you can enthusiastically embrace something that was garbage and be like, I liked this because I was seven, you know, but you cannot reinterpret it as being something great. It's still crap.
Right.
It's just crap that you imprinted on early.
Right.
When you were, you know, too young to know the difference between good and bad.
No, yeah.
For years, I thought Santa and the Three Bears was a fine animation. You know why? Because I was taken to see it when I was like 5 years old.
Well, that's why there's a Thundercats movie being made. Because
Thundercats was kind of awesome, though. Because I would watch that sometimes in the afternoon between classes.
Really?
Yeah. Look, I had a lot of other things going on.
So you weren't playing Quarters, but you were watching Thundercats?
Sometimes.
Okay, well, I don't know that comes out better in the tally, frankly.
It does. It does. Because Thundercats informed me of a lot of things.
Such as?
What Thundercats do. They fly around and they take care of business when bad guys are trying to...
When the evil Shredder attacks?
I don't know.
It's the wrong one, I know.
What's the other movie?
Apollo
18.
Well, okay, yeah, here's the thing. I have seen two movies that I want to discuss with Dave White, but he hasn't seen them yet, and they are Higher Ground, featuring Joshua Leonard of Shark Knight 3D fame, and Gainsbourg, A Heroic Life. And when Dave sees them, we will talk about them. Dave has seen Apollo 18, and I am never seeing Apollo 18.
No, you don't.
So
you don't know.
Go right ahead and talk about Apollo 18.
You don't need to see Apollo 18. Oh, there's one other thing that's good about Shark Knight.
There's anything good about Shark Knight?
Catherine McPhee in one moment. This is where I was going with Catherine.
Oh, okay.
If you're a fan of the movie Dangerous Men... And I know that's a really esoteric title.
Yeah, it hasn't really played a lot outside of Los Angeles. But it's one of those movies like The Room and Birdemic and After Last Season.
Worse, brain damaging.
But it's I'm saying it's relative to those in that it is the product of a crackpot auteur.
Yeah. more crackpot than any of those other three people combined.
Because this is one of those movies that stopped shooting and started shooting again like 10 years later. So you see characters age in the film.
Every single scene, every single moment in this movie is dazzling in its
ineptness,
crazy ineptitude, and everything wrong at the same time-ness.
There's a part early on where two people are in a restaurant and it's silent, but then whenever they talk, there's all this
car noise,
background
passing
noise.
Cars.
But then, and then as soon as they stop talking, it's silent again.
It's like they've been, I don't know, it's like they recorded their
on a busy intersection.
On a busy intersection, and then looped it into the movie. It doesn't make any sense at all. There's an element of mystery to Dangerous Men. Like, you're confused as to even how it could exist. And I've seen it like four times, and it's just wonderful. But there's a great scene in Dangerous Men
early on
where the main woman who in the film, and when I say main woman, I mean the main woman of the first 20 minutes.
Right.
Because after until about 25 minutes, it shifts gears and you never see her again. She,
her fiance has just been murdered on the beach by two bikers.
And so she becomes a lady of the night.
No. But
she tells that lamp on the table that she's
okay. But you're getting ahead of things. You're getting ahead of things.
It doesn't matter, really.
No, no, because what you're, I know what you're getting at with the Catherine McPhee thing. The biker, as one would, takes her to dinner, and then they takes her up to his hotel room because she tells him that, you know, she's so impressed with his manliness because he killed her fiance. So they go to dinner. She orders steak.
Yes.
And very craftily hides the knife.
That's right.
Between her buttocks. So that later, when she's getting naked with the biker, she may remove the steak knife from between her buttocks to dispatch
her buttocks
to dispatch the biker.
In my review, I said butt cheeks.
Ah,
I think that's either that works way. Too. Whatever you want to say,
sure.
However you would like to refer to the
haunch,
the buttle area.
Yes, the hams.
She, Catherine McPhee, has a knife in her butt cheeks.
Yes,
in Shark Night. And I like to think that maybe
it's a shout out.
It's a shout out. Like, maybe she saw Dangerous Men and she stopped production when he said, "I've got an idea. What if I hid a knife in my butt cheeks to attack the bad guy who's making sharks happen?" You know, it kind of gave me a little bit of a thrill.
There's nothing like watching a terrible movie and being briefly reminded of a movie you'd much rather be watching.
An even more terrible movie that you wish you were watching again for the fifth time.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Apollo 18. I saw Apollo 18. I'm saying we're telling you where we saw these movies this week because neither one of them were seen at press screenings. Because there were no press screenings. Apollo 18 was Friday morning at 10:30 a.m. at the AMC Century 15, Century City 15.
Which no longer smells like foot.
Which no longer smells like foot. They have taken care of their foot smell problem.
Yes.
Good for them.
Bravo, AMC Century City 15.
So it was me and like 40 people, which blew my mind.
At like 10 a.m.?
At like 10 a.m. Now, mind you, they did not put it into a big house. They put it into one of their little tiny houses. House 7, to be specific.
Still, that's 40 people, though.
There was a good 30 to 40 people in this theater. And on top of it, AMC Century City 15.
And they weren't even all film critics.
Now does the... I didn't recognize anyone.
Huh.
Yeah. Now they do assigned seats there. And there's almost...
Oh, them too.
I hate the assigned
seats. Enough with the assigned seats.
Thing, because unless you're the Arclight and you have other amenities that make the assigned seat situation kind of good, don't do it. Don't do it. The assigned seats at the Arclight are nice because, you know, the seats are big and you're guaranteed that, you know, someone's actually sort of paying a little bit of attention to where they're assigning the seats and you've got an usher there that checks in on the movie to make sure that everything's going well. You know, it's like, it's a better overall experience. And when I say unless you're at the Arclight, I'm talking about Los Angeles. I know that people listening outside of Los Angeles don't have Arclights, but the one beef with the Arclight assigned seating is when you go to the dome and there's like 20 people in a screening, and the dome is huge,
right?
But then if there's a doofus at the ticket counter, they'll put all those 20 people in the same three center rows.
Yeah, like
they're smashed right up against.
They think everybody wants to sit together.
Strangers.
Actually, anywhere.
I want a minimum of two seats between me and the next total stranger.
I find anywhere in the Arclight they'll try and stick you near people. And I'm always like, no, back here.
I prefer a minimum of three empty seats between me and the next total stranger.
Ideally, yes.
None is best. If I can have the entire theater to myself, that's my preferred screening room.
If I can wear Kleenex boxes on my feet and pee in empty milk bottles and grow my fingernails really long, that is my ideal.
Then it is my private fort.
Right.
My private movie fort in which I am hiding
from the world.
Everybody. And so but I didn't get that at Apollo 18. I got the minimum two seats. I got the two seats, mostly because I moved from, grimy looking people who decided to go see Apollo 18. So that was not good. But what was good are the trailers that happened before Apollo 18. Contagion is a fantastic trailer.
That is a great trailer, yes.
And I've seen the trailer now three times, and what I get from the trailer, finally, is the scenario. Gwyneth Paltrow destroys the world.
Yes, she brings
Gwyneth Paltrow.
She brings bird flu back from Asia and destroys us all.
Which is why she's on the poster looking near death and awesome. Like that is a poster that I wish kind of owned that I owned. The poster with her giant
a sallow
near Gwyneth death Paltrow. Scared to death face of Gwyneth Paltrow. I saw the trailer for I Don't Know How She Does It, which is going to be
insufferable.
Insufferable. It's going to be the worst movie of the
year. I saw that trailer attached to Spy Kids 4D.
Like, I think maybe The Roommate and Shark Knight together as a double feature might wind up being a better option than I Don't Know How She Does It. Because my favorite shot of the trailer, please watch the trailer online. My favorite shot of the trailer is Sarah Jessie P's little daughter staring sadly out a window as mommy goes off to work. But mommy, why must you work so much?
It is.
Well, kids, it's because Republicans have ruined everything, and now you have to have two incomes to survive no matter where you live. Neither mommy nor daddy can stay home with you, and you must stare out the window at them.
Somebody needs to write,
while they run.
Somebody needs to write a doctoral thesis about how in the Great Depression we got all these movies that were these sort of glossy fantasies about wealth. Or movies that made rich people look ridiculous, like My Man Godfrey or whatever. But now, in this recession, where everybody is working like crazy to try and, keep their house and stay ahead of the game and, save a little money maybe after they pay all their bills and all the other stuff. Movie after movie after movie to make parents feel guilty about actually going to jobs and not like staying home with their kids and making cupcakes all day. What is that about?
Anyway, so those are the trailers. And then I watched Apollo 18, which is kind of about nothing. Like it was a movie that won a contest.
Right.
What's his face?
Screenwriting contest. Timur Bembekov.
Bembekatov? I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be cute here. It's hard to pronounce his name. He's a Russian director. He directed Wanted.
Yeah, and
Wanted is rad.
It was fun. Yeah, and Night Watch and Day Watch, which I didn't see.
But this is just a found footage Blair Witch Project on the Moon movie, and it's about. Now, in my review, I gave readers an out. As if you don't want to know what the secret is, then stop reading. But I'm not going to give you that option here because I'm fixing to tell you everything that happens. So
press stop
right now if you are really, not wanting to hear about the great scary secret of Apollo 18, which isn't
great or scary.
Great or scary at all. So they go to the moon and there are these rocks.
Uh-huh.
These are bad rocks. These rocks do bad things.
Like they get thrown through people's windows?
They're alive. These rocks are alive. Uh-huh. And they run around on their little rock legs and they get in your...
Wait, they have legs?
Yeah. And they leave tracks.
They don't just slide around like with stop motion
photography. No, they grow legs and they run around and go like decapods.
Recurring theme.
And they get in the space suit and the helmet and they attack your face. They get inside your belly like the alien in Aliens. And you know, they jump out at you. Rocks.
Do they like get together and cause an avalanche?
They necessitate some space surgery. And you can't quite figure out, like, why didn't the other moon missions encounter these?
Yeah, Apollo's 1 through 17.
Doom rocks. Right there, yeah. And were these rocks that were asleep? Do they just really hate these two astronaut dudes a lot? Like, oh, the other astronauts were fine. These guys suck. Let's get them.
Aren't they played by Brits?
Both of the astronauts are played by British actors.
Maybe the rocks.
One's Irish, and one is from England. And they do, you know, because we don't know who they are. I looked them both up on IMDb. They do lots of British TV. And they were chosen specifically for their sort of anonymity because they've done lots and lots of stuff in England and Ireland, but they're not known here. Their faces aren't known here. So they're not credited in the film, adding to the blah, blah, blah.
Found footage.
We found this footage. It's classified and banned and from NASA. And no one, they don't want you to know the truth about the rocks that are killing. Oh, God. The rocks are killing people on the moon.
Now, and
they've already killed two. And if you're next. If you go to the moon.
Well, Domino's Pizza says they want to be the first restaurant on the moon, so I hope they get attacked by rocks.
Well,
if that's indeed what happens. And Transformers 3 already did the whole secrets on the moon plot this summer anyway. It's weird how, like, now that NASA barely exists anymore, we have this sudden nostalgia for, like, back when America was capable of doing things like walking on the moon, where now we can't even, you know, fix bridges.
Yeah, I just, you know, there are some cool breathing noises in this movie that kind of spacesuit noises.
They speed up when they get all tense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of thing.
There's some fun old school news footagey looking stuff that they've, you know, faked. Mm-hmm. And it looks kind of good.
Like black and white Walter Cronkite sort of.
The actors are a little bicep-y
for the 60s.
For the early
70s.
Early 70s. They're a little too bicep-y. The clothes, their civilian clothes are a little too, like,
athletic
cut. Yeah, you know.
Go back and look at Steve McQueen, people.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. It's boring and terrible. It's boring and terrible. It's no Solaris, that's for sure.
Boy, if you're more boring than Solaris.
Solaris is not boring. Solaris is meditative.
True. Solaris dares you to be bored.
But Solaris dares you to be bored.
Also this week is Dead.
The Dead.
Yes. Which, whatever.
Everything is, yeah. I mean, it's getting
it's
good.
It's Labor Day weekend.
It's getting good reviews. It's getting fairly decent reviews, and I don't understand why. You know what I think it is? I think Helen Mirren has the entire world hypnotized.
And I think people are just so starved for any movie that has the appearance of being...
For grown-ups?
Yeah, like an art house-y sort of thing. Yeah. They're like, okay, sure, we'll take it. But it doesn't really work.
It's about Mossad agents, and they have to...
Late 60s, yeah, they go into East Berlin to capture a Nazi war criminal.
And in the 60s, these people are Jessica Chastain and Sam Worthington and...
Some guy who looks too much like Kieran Hines because he grows up to be Tom Wilkinson.
Yeah, and Sam Worthington grows up to be
Kieran Hines
and Jessica Chastain grows up to be Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, they get this guy, but there's a secret, and you don't know what the secret is. Now, I won't spoil the secret here, because...
The trailer kind of tells you what the secret is.
No, it doesn't.
Kind of.
I haven't seen the trailer, and so...
Anyway, things are not as the historical record demonstrates them to be.
Oh, you just gave it away.
No, I didn't... That's it. I'm not done getting the specifics. And then, of course, because the that unfinished bit of business comes back to haunt them years later.
Yeah, there's a problem happens. And look, the only reason you need to see this movie is to watch Jessica Chastain kick some...
Do Krav Maga.
Yeah, and she has the best, like, gotcha kind of moment in the movie. And she gets him in a headlock and with her legs. And it's
oh,
great.
Right.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's not as good as Romeo is Bleeding when Lena Olin starts strangling Gary Oldman from the backseat of the car with her thighs.
Right. The rest of the movie is about old people ruining the day, basically. And it's sort of like, you know, oh, how can we live with what we have done? And how must we make it right? And should we tell?
You can't tell the truth.
No one can handle the truth. And the myth should be kept together.
The man who shot
history demands that we continue the myth of our heroic.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, Helen Mirren was more captivating in Red, which is a thoroughly mediocre film. But at least in that movie,
she fires an automatic weapon.
She fires automatic weapons wearing ball gowns. And that's, you know.
Who doesn't want to see that?
That's fantastic. But here it's kind of gray and somber and dour. And it's the kind of movie that you think, when you're walking in, you know, it's got all these Oscar-y kind of people attached to it.
It's from the movie director itself, of Shakespeare in Love.
The movie itself feels like it thinks it's an Oscar-y kind of movie, and
yeah, it definitely has this air of we're telling a very important story here, and it's like, not really. Just because you're about Israel and a Holocaust war criminal does not automatically make you, you know,
yeah,
deep.
No. Got a DVD recommendation.
What's yours?
L'Enfance Nue.
Oh, that was going to be mine.
Ha ha! Well, it can be both of ours.
Well, no, I'll think of something else. I have another one, actually.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay. We actually saw this film projected Friday night at CineFamily.
Well, yeah, and they were...
And I will spell out the title for you so you can go look it up yourself. L'Enfance. That's the first word. L'Enfance. And new, Nue. It's French. 1968 movie by Maurice Pialat.
They were promoting it as a rare 35mm screening, so I didn't realize until later that it was actually on DVD. I thought it was...
Yeah, but apparently apparently there aren't a lot of prints around.
I guess, yeah. But it's a Criterion Collection DVD.
It's an archival print that we got that wasn't even in perfect shape. It had some
scratches, but
some
it was
scratchiness
okay.
to it. But I just like seeing, I really do, you know, if you said, here, watch this DVD of L'Enfance Nue, I'd be like, okay, whatever, I'll put it on the stack of all the things I have to watch. But if you say to me,
this is your one chance to see it in 35.
Would you like to go out to sit on the comfy leather couches at CineFamily and watch a kind of...
Pretty good
old school print of this movie after eating, you know... turkey open-faced hot sandwich with gravy and mashed potatoes at Cantor's, then I'm super on board for all of that. That is what I will do. But if you say, here, watch this DVD, I'll think,
yeah,
I don't know. You know, Monster Bug Wars is on. But I was really, 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 really happy that we went to see this for a couple reasons. One, I get beaten down by the Shark Knights of the world. I really do. And even by the good movies that mainstream Hollywood delivers our way. Like, I just saw Warrior.
Which we'll talk about next week.
Which opens next week. And I loved it. I loved Warrior. I'm just going to say that now. We'll talk about it in detail next week. But I loved Warrior. It's a great, big, entertaining, you know, emotional, powerful, you know, Hollywood mainstream film. But even the good versions of mainstream Hollywood and then, of course, the Shark Knights, I feel a little carby and bloated after I see too much of that stuff. You know, I really, 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 really need to go off to the museum or to CineFamily or to the New Beverly or somewhere, UCLA or
American
whatever.
Cinematheque.
Or the Cinematheque and see something... that is really It's actually art.
It's like when you had a lot of candy, you then suddenly need something salty.
It's also like after being in Texas for a week, like I was, and eating nothing but meat, and barbecue and fried peach pies, that I come home and I think, do we have anything green in this house that I could put in my body? Because I can feel my body telling me that it must have some.
That's how I know. Char. That's how I know I'm old, because I start sometimes I actually crave broccoli.
And not to make this movie sound like broccoli.
No.
But it's a real film. It is cinema.
It's a movie that doesn't tell you what it's about all the time.
It is purely cinematic in that it gives you not just something that is briskly paced and entertaining, but in truly meaningful and intelligent, and also this guy's first movie.
That he made in his 40s.
That he made in his 40s in 1968, completely groundbreaking in terms of how it looks and how it moves and what it feels like. Very documentary-ish, very, you know, right here, right now, you are there. No score, just unsentimental, you know, unpredictable, and it's about a kid who gets shuffled off from foster home to foster home with reason, because he's a bad kid. he's not a good kid. I mean, like, in his heart, he is a good kid. But his behavior is so erratic, and he is so violent and so unpredictably violent at even people that he claims to like that you can't even say, well, you know, if we love him enough, he might get better. He might not. Now, it's not Macaulay Culkin, the good son, you know, kind of stuff.
No.
It's, you know, he throws, you know, pieces of lead pipe at cars as they pass on the freeway. He
steals things.
He throws a knife at another kid's face. He misses, but, you know.
He kills a cat.
But it is a heartbreaking movie about childhood and about children who never have a chance, who don't have a chance, who don't stand a chance. And I won't even give away the ending, because actually it's kind of ambiguous. Alonzo and I both took away different things from the ending. But it is so fantastic, and I have not seen any of this guy's other films. He only made about 10 movies in his whole life, but I got to go see the rest of them now. If you like the Dardenne brothers, if you've seen, like, was it Rosetta that was there?
Yeah.
The Sun and Lorna's Silence. If you've seen any of the Dardenne brothers films and you like them, they were influenced by Pialat.
Yeah.
So go see this. Go get the DVD wherever you can find it. It's Criterion put out a copy.
Yeah.
So wherever you get your DVDs, you know, do it. Or if you're lucky, you know, and your town has a repertory house that decides, oh, yeah, we're going to do this too, go. Anyway, that's it. So tell me yours.
Mine, also French and also from the Criterion Collection they just put out this week, The Complete Jean Vigo, who is one of the most influential filmmakers ever, despite the fact that he made three shorts and a feature. So this this DVD is literally the complete Jean Vigo. It's his entire cinematic output. The feature film is called La Talante, which is about newlyweds on their boat.
On a boat.
But a very
slow moving boat.
Yes. He's probably best known for a film called Zero de Conduite, which is zero for conduct, about misbehaving schoolboys that has this great, like, pillow fight sequence. I know this sounds ridiculous, but it's a great movie. and it's a terrific collection. They have, you know, as usual with Criterion, lots of cool extras. There's a, you know, 1968 conversation between François Truffaut and Eric Rohmer about La Talante. There's essays by Michael Almereyda and Luc Santé and some other people. Just a bunch of really cool stuff. And it reminded me that in the late 90s, Julian Temple, who directed, you know, Absolute Beginners and The Great Rock and Roll Swindle, did this really gorgeous biopic about Jean Vigo called Vigo. And it's never been released in the United States. And I saw it at the Toronto Film Festival and wept and loved it. And
you weep a lot of.
No, I'm pretty picky about where I weep.
You're a crybaby.
I cry more movies than you do. But you know. Anyway,
I cried watching Warrior.
Oh. Okay,
then we'll talk more about
it. You are officially invited to shut up.
I cried while watching Warrior.
Brother.
I promise I'll explain myself.
Oy. Anyway, so, you know, if you have a region-free player and a place that rents region-free DVDs and you can track down the, like, a British or whatever DVD of this movie Vigo, I recommend that it's lovely. But in the meantime, so that you know what the movie Vigo is about, check out Criterion's The Complete Jean Vigo on DVD and Blu-ray. So, yeah, we have a cool bit of an announcement to make because it's finally being posted on their website so we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Dave and I have recorded our very first DVD commentary track.
Yeah, that's true.
For a cheesy and 1971 Canadian exploitation film called
Caged Men.
Yes, also known as I'm going to get you,
Elliot Boy.
Elliot Boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is basically a dudes in prison movie.
Gay dudes in prison.
Well,
prison turning everybody gay.
Yeah, yeah. Or
apparently
something
you're
like
not
that.
Gay until you go to prison.
And then
in prison
out.
You turn gay and then you know when you get out you can't function properly.
Yeah.
Because gay will ruin you.
Pretty much, yeah.
You will
be all gets you all rapey and setting people on fire.
It turns you incredibly rapey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's coming out, I think November, but later this
year.
Yeah,
just announced it on the site, coderedDVD.com.
Yeah.
And they've described us as world, what did they describe us as?
World-renowned
gay critics. I like that. I'm a gay critic. I critic gay things.
Yes.
I'm very critical of gay.
And
most of the time,
and we're,
in fact.
We're,
so they are kind of right.
And we're huge in Lithuania. We're world-renowned. Actually, our friend Anthony listens to us in the UK, so I guess that counts.
And I think there are some Duraldes over in Spain that might be
listening to this show. I don't
possibly,
know. I would hope so.
So that's world. That's
fair
world
enough.
Too.
Yeah. So that's happening. So yeah, as always, I'll tell you, we have not been getting emails of late. So please, questions, comments, whatever, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, linoleumcast. And like us at Facebook, Linoleum Knife Podcast. And if you are a get glue person, if you check in when you're listening to music or watching movies or shows, you can check in.
Like a dummy.
I like doing it.
No, you know what? You don't even do it right because they send you stickers.
I haven't
they
gotten them
They send you
yet.
Literal, physical, actual stickers in the mail and you haven't even asked for them.
I will at some point.
You need to get those stickers. Because we've got things to put stickers on. Our locker.
Your trapper
our
keeper.
Trapper keeper. You get those stickers.
All right. Anyway.
Because it's not like on Yelp. What do you get those fake medals? I'm the Duke of...
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the Duke of Robertson Tilton Art Gallery.
You're
yeah.
That boy that chafes
you. Chafes me so badly.
Ha ha ha. Anyway, so if you're a Get Glue person, you can check into Linoleum Knife. We're listed under TV shows for some reason, but...
We're TV on the internet.
Yes, we're TV for your ears. Check in on that and if you want to leave us a nice review at iTunes, that would be lovely. Tell your friends about the show. Our numbers seem to be creeping northward, which is nice. So
oh, really?
Yeah. So continue the word of mouth, please.
So thanks both of you.
Exactly.
For telling one other person.
And so on. and, of course, check out our friends, the Popcorn Mafia, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley. And
I have one more thing to announce.
Hang on. Let me finish this, and then we'll talk about that. There's something coming up after this, so don't shut off yet. Blowhard, the podcast, the Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Secretly Timid, and Glitter in the Garbage. And another cool thing coming up, if you are going to be in the Los Angeles area... Or already are.
On October 2nd, the West Hollywood Book Fair is happening over, somewhere in West Hollywood.
I think over near like the tennis courts, right? In that park?
I don't know. I don't know where
that's where it usually is.
Okay, well, the West Hollywood Book Fair
on
is happening on Sunday, October 2nd. We are going to be there for 3 hours in a booth signing copies of our respective books.
Yes.
Because we got books,
mm-hmm.
and we would love to sell them to you and put our signatures in them.
Yes.
And say and write little personal notes to you and take your cash.
We would like all those things.
We would especially like the cash. We do not accept credit cards because we are not set up for that kind of thing.
No.
But yeah, the West Hollywood Book Fair, we're going to be there and we're going to be at a table and we're going to be signing and selling our books. And it's going to be so exciting for you. You come out and meet us.
It'll be exciting for everybody. So yeah, so please come tell your friends about it. It's going to be here in West Hollywood in October. And yeah, Dave will be signing Exile in Guyville and the compilation Love is a Four-Letter Word and Issues of Slate.
Which
as well.
I didn't write. I didn't write Love is a Four-Letter Word, but I contributed an essay to
That's right. the it's an anthology
and I have many copies. I have a lot of copies.
Are you gonna be bringing copies of Slake too? Or
no, that's not my. I mean, that's not my like
project.
That's not my project. I'm in Slake and I'm loving that I'm in Slake. And okay. But they have their own events that they sell gotcha. Their copies at, and that would be weird if I were
okay.
accumulating copies and selling.
All right, them. Doesn't make sense. Just checking. And so and I will be signing 101 Must See Movies for Gay Men and Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And, you know, October, it'll be a good time to start stocking up on those stocking stuffers.
Christmas movie books really make a perfect Christmas gift.
Yes.
They sure do.
They sure do. So we hope to see you there. And, thanks for listening. And anything else?
Decapods.
Thank you. Adios.
I just said I said my goodbye. I said decapods.
All right.
That's my goodbye. Goodbye. Okay. Decapods.